It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Dimitri, what's up, man?
Not a lot, buddy. Long time no talk to.
Long time no talk indeed, man. I feel like that was a great segue. What's up, guys? Appreciate you all having us. I first want to say thank you to Brad Kellner of Texas Sports Unfiltered, obviously giving us the opportunity. Brad and I had done some work previously talking Texas Longhorns, talking SEC, what have you. But when he came to me with the idea of SEC Unfiltered having their own, let's just call it a power hour, right? I think that's a good way to phrase it. It felt like a no-brainer, obviously, with Texas and both Texas and Oklahoma coming into the league. We all know about the fantastic fan bases both those teams have, especially, of course, the Texas Longhorns. And we felt like we could bring a little SEC flavor to the daily show offerings and obviously talk a lot of Texas, but let you guys know what's going on around the league. And like I said, the beauty is in the banter, man. We love to chop it up. We love to discuss. We love to debate. And I know Dimitri feels the same way. And again, there will be a rotating cast of characters that we will have on the show on a daily basis. So you'll get a lot of me. You'll get a lot of Dimitri. Again, we have other folks. I mentioned Cole Thompson, Dave Shoemate, Lucas Hill, Harrison Fant. These are all people that you will meet at some point, a lot of them throughout this week.
Yeah.
But again, want to start by saying thank you to Brad Kellner for the opportunity. Really, really excited for this. This is obviously our first show, very first episode of the audience that's tuned in. Thank you all so much for tuning in and really excited to get to know each and every single one of you. I'm not a stranger to live shows myself, nor is Dimitri, who has done them on, I would say, what, a national stage, basically, when it comes to radio?
Yeah, national and local around and local. The Carolinas and the Alabama Gulf Coast. Yeah, this is a blast. I would say to the Texas audience, one thing you will learn about the SEC community very quickly. When I say the Texas audience, I mean those of you that bleed burnt orange. We get it now with all everything you told us about A&M. We totally get it now. They are fucking weird, man.
Yeah, like I don't even think it's disrespectful at this point to say that A&M is fucking weird.
No,
they're weird.
They love the fact that they're weird.
They do.
They think it's weird. We think they're weird.
Colt is a compliment when it comes to Texas A&M. But I mentioned all that to say, by the way, that both Dimitri and I and all of us that'll be hosting, co-hosting the show, we all know the value in our audience, interacting with our audience, building a relationship with our audience. I've always said forever in my entire career, I'm talking with you guys, not to you. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Interject whatever you have throughout the show. We will take questions, comments, and of course, we will be hanging out, shooting the you know what, and having a good time. So Dimitri, like I said, again, really, really excited. This is the first of many. The NFL draft, let's go ahead and dive into it, took place over the weekend. I know you want to talk about best fits, who's going to be a star immediately in the SEC. Who do you think was the best dress, though, especially in the first round? I'll tell you this, the Bama guys always put on a show when it comes to the NFL draft.
When you say who is the best fit in the first round, like, do you have to think about it? It was Terrion Arnold, man. Yeah. He looked like a million bucks. I'm so happy. Not only, it's always cool to see who gets drafted by the hometown team, right? But the fact that he was there to show out and he was the one that got picked and he stole Kaylee Hartung's microphone to talk directly to the crowd. It was a cool moment. It really was.
Yeah. I thought Jaden Daniels too, with kind of like the highlights or whatever in the jacket.
Yeah.
That's always a really cool move.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. You're a younger guy than I am. When did the inside lining of the jacket become the bigger fashion statement than the jacket itself?
Yeah, that, I think that's definitely a recent thing. It's a recent thing for sure. Within the last couple of years, I remember seeing that like 5-6 years ago. And I think that was like the first time I had ever seen it. So it obviously got made more popular when dudes like in the NFL draft and other, I think, events and occasions started to rock it. But I mean, you got some dudes, I think, that want to show off the flair inside the jacket. Guys like Terrion Arnold. I did think he was the best dressed. I did.
Yeah.
I mean, that just, you can't beat the suit.
Listen, we have spent, as men in the United States, we've spent so long being told that pink is an effeminate color and we shouldn't be wearing it. Dude, we've been missing out. Like, it's such a good look.
I mean, listen, I just said Jaden Daniels. LSU is the one team I think that makes purple look good. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I like, you know, I went to Baton Rouge a couple years ago and planning on going back, but they make purple work, which is not easy to do.
Baton Rouge, the only place I've ever been where I have seen somebody drop trout and poop on an opposing fan's tailgate. Swear to God.
And I'm sure Texas fans already know this, but yeah, the whole smells like corn dogs thing, it's for real.
Yep.
That's for real.
Yeah. In terms of, I don't know if this is best fit, but like poised to be a star right away out of the SEC. You mentioned LSU. I don't think any of those great receivers are in a better position on day one than Brian Thomas Jr. in Jacksonville. Like, I think he is that big over the top threat, both in terms of size and speed. It's like the thing that Trevor Lawrence has clearly needed that for some reason the Jaguars have negated to give him until now. I love that pick by them.
Hey, I do too. I really thought, obviously, Malik Nabers was the feature guy, but Brian Thomas Jr., the way he burst on the scene in his final year, he's got the he's one of those dudes, I think, that you looked at and you were just kind of waiting. You were kind of waiting to see it, and finally it happened. So I think certainly when you got the trigger man like Trevor Lawrence, and I think Brian Thomas Jr. will pan out well. I think Xavier Leggett with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
You know, I tell you this, the Panthers have invested in giving Bryce Young all the help that he can get. I know you're a Panthers guy. You actually talk Panthers on your own show, so you can plug that if you want. But Xavier Leggett, I don't know what's going to be more memorable, his play on the field or his accent, but either way, I think it was a good pickup.
His accent, I've been, for the older people in the crowd, I've been comparing it to, if you saw the movie, the original Kings of Comedy, Cedric the Entertainer's bit on the old man that lives on the block and can fix everyone's cars and talks with a cigarette in his mouth. I mean, it is... It is country, right? I love Leggett, too. I loved him at Carolina. I think he's going to be a great fit for the Panthers. Real quick, I want to, because it's funny. I think the Panthers with Leggett and Deontay Johnson could do something similar to what LSU did with Thomas and Nabers this year, which is they kind of switched up the roles because of their skill set, right? Nabers was the X, but Thomas played like the X. I think the same could be true of the Panthers with Leggett, where, you know, Johnson is going to be that feature receiver role, but probably Leggett's going to be the guy that they are asking to go get the long balls every time.
Did you feel like receiver was the Panthers' biggest problem last year when it came to Bryce? I mean, they had a lot of problems. So, I mean, they needed to help him. I remember watching them in training camp, and I mean, we obviously didn't know how bad it was going to be then, but you know, there were some holes in the roster. I mean, did you feel like receiver, do you feel like they addressed their needs in the draft?
I think so. Because I'll add, like, I liked Jonathan Brooks. I like that pickup too. And I would ask Texas fans this, the only thing that gives me pause about Brooks is coming off of the ACL and that running back was not a top tier need. I don't like the pick in the second round, but I do like him a lot. So, you know, talk me out of that, I guess, Texas fans. But yeah, I mean, I love what they've done to address receiver. I don't think they're done. If the Panthers finish with a top three pick again next year, by all means, go get Luther Burden. Like, don't stop here. But they are certainly better. They certainly have two more guys that can create separation this year. They didn't have one last year. Actually, let me reframe. They had one in Jonathan Mingo, but he could either catch the ball or create separation. He could not do both on the same route.
Dimitri, not to steal your thunder, I know you were going to get into this, but you mentioned, obviously, NFL draft coverage. We're all college football fans here, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of Texas folks in here. It's Houston Texans, it's Dallas Cowboys. But we're all, like, really, honestly, Dimitri, when I was watching the NFL draft and I was watching these highlights, I told my buddy, I was like, this just gets me excited for college football.
Absolutely.
Like, really, truly. Draft, like,
the draft feels like graduation day to me. Like, it's a chance to celebrate all these dudes you've been, like, really loving watching the last three or four years.
And then a day later, we're talking about 2025 draft. They already got odds on who's going to be the top pick. But you mentioned the College Game Day crew was doing the NFL draft. Nick Saban on game day. I thought he was electric. I mean, the fact that he opened up about, what was it? I think Quinshon Marshall was his name, the Toledo corner, when he's like, yeah, we tried to get him in the portal. And
yeah.
Didn't work out. Like, I think there's going to be so many fun stories like that Nick Saban is organically sharing, that whether he should or should not, he's retired, so like, who gives a shit? Like, I think he's going to anyways, but like, I think he's going to be an electric ad to game day, man.
So as a Bama guy, I always like, I was very much aware of how good he could be on TV teaching the game and talking about what we are trying to do on individual plays. As a media guy, it was very clear to me Nick Saban is going to get sick of the fake laughter and dick slapping really quickly. Like, I thought that he was great, but the whole time I was watching it, I was thinking, I bet he'd be happier, like, in a game play-by-play booth where he just has the game to talk about and doesn't have to deal with the big over-the-top fake laughter from Desmond Howard. Kirk Herbstreit cutting him off every 5 seconds to tell some shitty fake joke. Like, I thought he was good. It just feels weird, man.
I think McAfee helps, though, with him.
Agreed.
I think McAfee, like I don't even know if he'd be in the role if it weren't for McAfee being smooth the transition, maybe is the word.
Yeah. So I write about sports media for a site called BarrettSportsMedia.com. And in October of last year, I predicted that Saban would retire and head to game day. And part of the reason was, as much as I like Saban, and I'm a little bit older than the McAfee target audience, but I like him. Like, I think he's a talented dude. Saban does not seem like the kind of guy that signs up to put up with the McAfee show antics if there's not a larger plan. And I think it's clear they developed a good chemistry by the end of the year. I think you're right. I think that once you add McAfee to that panel, maybe it will flow a little bit easier and Saban will look a little more at peace and in place with everybody else.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it for sure. Dimitri, switching gears. Again, we're kind of just jumping all over the place. Guys, that's how we're going to operate, by the way. This is going to be very free-flowing, like I mentioned, from the hippie pool. We'll have topics to discuss, but certainly, especially when we're in the quote-unquote off-season. I know that's a dirty word to some people, but that's really what it is.
Real quick, before we switch gears, I do want to say, like, I think after this draft, what is interesting is next year is going to be like a real old-school SEC year, right? Like, yeah, you've got the quarterbacks, but overall, we think it's a weak quarterback class. Like, the SEC, all the stars are on the defensive side of the ball next year, right? Pierce at Tennessee, Perkins at LSU, Starks at Georgia, what's the kid's name? Walker at Kentucky. I mean, there is a lot of star power that is going to be about those big monsters mowing guys over as opposed to the small, speedy receivers and quarterbacks.
Which will be a welcome sight because it was wild to see the draft this year and what, like, the first 15 picks,
first
I think, were
15 picks. Yeah, man. I mean, it was bananas.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Everybody just wants to see 50 points per game anyways. I was going to ask you, Dimitri, all the Texas fans in here, obviously, what's the one thing do you think that Texas fans and Oklahoma fans don't know about the SEC yet that they're going to learn that maybe you can't learn until you experience it firsthand?
Yeah, you don't matter. I mean, and that's not directed at Texas or Oklahoma specifically. It's that you don't matter unless you're on top. There is no default to make it work out for, you know, listen, I live in ACC country, right? I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. The ACC really did put its thumb on the scale for Florida State a few years ago, like to make things work out the best they could. The SEC is confident that whoever wins the conference is the best team in America, whether they win the 2 playoff games or, I guess, in the future, 3 playoff games or not. The conference is confident that its champion, regardless of who it is, can compete with anybody in the country. I think Texas and Oklahoma have experienced that themselves. I don't think they experienced that in the Big 12, right? Mm-hmm. Like, remember that year that it was 07, that Kansas and Missouri were 2 of the 3 best teams in the conference. And the conference was having a panic attack of, holy shit, what if Kansas wins this conference? We're going to get embarrassed on a national stage.
Yeah, I mean, I think the SEC is so deep. Like you mentioned, you don't have to worry about that. But it's funny. It just made me think about how Missouri used to run things in the Big 12. Chase Daniels and those, that crowd. I remember back 2005 when they beat South Carolina in the Independence Bowl. I forget the quarterback's name they had. He was one of the 600 club guys. Either way, it's to your point. I would agree with that. You don't matter. That's a funny one. I don't even know what I would say, man. I will say this. The nastiness of SEC fans, the passion, but the nastiness.
Yeah.
Boy, you really don't know until you get in those trenches. So it'll be, I mean, I know it's there in the Big 12, it's there across college football, but it's different. I mean, it's different, man.
I went to the A&M Alabama game the first year A&M was in the SEC, and just walking from my car to the stadium, saying hello to everybody, welcoming them, many of them for the first time coming to the state, let alone Tuscaloosa, welcoming them, telling them what some of my favorite restaurants were when I was in college and telling them where to go after the game. And then immediately you walk through the gate and it's like, all right, fuck you. Hope you die. You know, I mean, like that's very much what it is. So Texas fans, get used to this. We will all be doing it every week. But it doesn't mean we're not happy you're here.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, right? Like, you're a South Carolina fan. You can't be happy about Texas and Oklahoma.
No, and I think what's kind of funny is there are a lot of the middle of the pack that are beating their chest loudest that I think don't realize, you know, there were 14 rungs on that ladder. Now there's 16.
Right.
And about 2/3 of the league is going to be moving down a rung because of Texas and Oklahoma's addition. And I think there's some that are probably going to learn that the hard way. So I just put it that way.
Let's make the people in Burnt Orange very happy. Do you really think it's going to be because of both Texas and Oklahoma?
Well, no.
I'll be completely honest with you. I think Texas's history in football is largely overblown. You had one great season, okay? But that being said, for the future, I think Texas is one of the three or four programs I would want to be going for. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true of Oklahoma.
Dimitri, I have pissed off a lot of Oklahoma fans. And by the way, I know nobody wants to hear it. They've been great in regards to interacting with our content to this point. Texas fans also have been great, but they have been very engaging, very interactive. But I think one of the reasons is because, like, for example, and we're dropping one for Texas later today, by the way, go check it out on our SEC Unfiltered YouTube. We're doing a best case, worst case series, best case scenario, worst case scenario in terms of record projections. And when you tell Oklahoma fans that the best case scenario for their football program in 2024 is 8-4,
yeah,
you're not going to make a lot of friends that way. But it's to the point, I think Texas is much more well-equipped at this point to come into the SEC, have immediate success. And I mean, I tell you this, I don't know if Steve Sarkisian himself made an Oklahoma schedule, but my God, I mean, it is, there's no even denying that Oklahoma got the more, I mean, their schedule is a murderer's row.
So let me ask you, and I don't know how much you want to give away with the Texas best case, worst case dropping later on. I will be right up front. I don't see how they are not the favorite for the SEC in year one. What do you think is worst case?
So I'll go ahead and reveal it. And again, guys, this drops around, I think, 4:30 or 5 o'clock. We got it scheduled for YouTube, so check it out. We'll have a graphic too. But my best case is 12-0. I mean, I don't –
of course.
You look at that schedule, they absolutely can go undefeated. You get Georgia at home. Of course, the game against Oklahoma is tricky, but I think they'll have revenge on the mind. Outside of that, like, I mean, you don't play Ole Miss. You don't play Mizzou. You don't play LSU. You don't play Tennessee, I believe. So, you know, it's not an easy schedule by any stretch, but it's as favorable as it gets. You have to go to Michigan, but it's going to be a shell of what Michigan was last year. Best case, 12-0. I mean, I think worst case, I said 9-3. And I mean, I even admitted in the segment, Dimitri, like, worst case is 9-3. I'd be shocked if they went 9-3. I'd be shocked. I mean, that would be Oklahoma's much better than we think. Obviously, they lose to Georgia. I mean,
finding
maybe Texas A&M in College Station. I mean, maybe that one. If it's a night game, raucous environment, crazy things happen in rivalry games. But that's really the only way Texas loses two or more games is if a couple rivalry games just turn on their heads. And, I mean, maybe that happens once. Probably not going to happen twice. So
no, I mean, honestly, if you were to ask me right now, and I, like, so everybody knows sort of the vibe at SEC Unfiltered, like, I am the comedy guy, right? Like, I make a lot of goofy videos, and I made this one literally right after the season, just recapping what Texas has coming back. Plus, they had the great recruiting class. Plus, they're adding a bunch of dudes from Bama, but Isaiah Bond is the one that's going to be the big difference maker. You know, to me, the worst case scenario is, oh, shucks, you only make the playoff as an at-large bid as opposed to that overall number one seed. I think this team is so good this year. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me right now if Texas is a lock to make the playoff, I would say they are. I mean, again, I know I said worst case is 9-3, but I would place good money on them to be in the college football playoff. So, yeah, funny enough, though, you mentioned, Dimitri, that Texas is your team to beat. This kind of segues perfectly into I dropped my own post-spring power rankings just because that's what we do this time of year. it's good for banter. It's good for content. It's a lot of fun, too. I've got Georgia number one. I still feel like the dogs are the team to beat. I feel like a Kirby Smart with a chip on the shoulder. I mean, dude, but again, Georgia's got to go to Austin. So, you know.
Have to go to Tuscaloosa,
and
too.
Go to Tuscaloosa, yes.
I think that, look, I am very impressed by Carson Beck. I did not think he was going to step into the leadership aspect of being the quarterback there as quickly as he did. I am a huge, huge, huge fan of Malachi Starks. I think that dude is everything you want in an SEC safety, both physically and emotionally. So I can see it. Kirby is obviously the best coach in college football now that his mentor is retired. Like, I think it is unquestionable. That being said, I just think there's more raw talent in Texas. And the fact that that game is going to be in Austin, I feel better about the Longhorns because, yes, a lot of teams, or excuse me, I should say a lot of talking heads are trying to, you know, pound the chest for the SEC. Oh, the Longhorns and the Sooners, they haven't experienced a week in, week out SEC schedule. Very true. There is also a class of teams in the SEC that could never dream to have the kind of roster Texas has this year. And so as you are racking up those wins, I think you are building confidence for those games against Georgia, those games against, you know, in the future, Alabama, LSU, just the tip top of the conference.
And just pulling up the schedule for Texas, Demetri, and again, we mentioned too, like, I want to say this because Texas fans, like, it's real. It's not just lip service. Like, really, truly, the thing that makes the SEC so difficult is you play Georgia one week, you get beat up, you're licking your wounds, and then LSU's waiting the next
right.
week. Like, there's truly – and then it's not even those. It's like the
– I would say games. I would say for Texas fans, go look at Florida's schedule this year. That's not weird in the SEC.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think Texas fans kind of get it, though. Like, they went to Arkansas a couple years ago and got their teeth kicked in. Like, they know what that type of buzzsaw is. So it's those games that make it difficult. It's you know, a Missouri who you go to Como and just weird things happen at that place. It's going to Lexington, Kentucky, and it's a strange. It's going to Williams-Brice Stadium at night, and that's just a strange place to play and weird things happen. But, I mean, you look at Texas's schedule again. They got the game at Michigan week two. I think they're going to win. I don't really know what to expect from Michigan. Brand new coach, brand new everything, it seems like. I think they'll take care of business in the Big House.
They have some continuity on defense, but that offense is so brand new. And you've got to think Sharon Moore is going to be happy to have, like, the shackles of what Harbaugh wants to do off. That it's hard to predict what they're going to be, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, that's going to be a tone setter for sure for them early. But assuming you win that one, Colorado State, UTSA, UM Monroe, all due respect, those are wins. I mean, you look at the rest of the schedule, Demetri. They got Mississippi State at home. Oklahoma is in the Texas State Fair, of course. Georgia's at home. Florida's at home. Kentucky's at home. Their road games, Demetri, outside of that Michigan game in non-conference, they're SEC true road games. At Vandy, at Arkansas, and then at Texas A&M to close it out. So, I mean,
dude,
you could have done a lot worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you could have. Listen, I think Arkansas is going to be a mess this year in terms of the way that program runs. Vanderbilt's bad. Like, I know you've got to have patience at Vanderbilt, but Clark Lee hasn't even shown any sort of progress there. I don't get it. I'm not saying I'm ready to give up on him. I just don't see it happening there. I genuinely think, and this is not like politics or tying him to Art Briles forever, I don't think Jeff Lebby is capable of being a head coach. I just don't. I don't think he has the demeanor. I think he's going to be very similar to Lane Kiffin pre the Saban rehabilitation, where he is just openly hostile towards his defense because he wants to game plan on the offensive side of the ball. Texas has caught a lot of breaks in this schedule. And, you know, this is similar to things people would say about Alabama, especially when they were on that, what, 3 titles in 4 years run in the late aughts, early tens. They caught a lot of breaks and they don't need them. So, you know, by the time you get to playoffs or conference championship game, they're probably going to be fresher than whoever else gets thrown up against them.
Demetri, Texas A&M, let's talk the rival really quickly. Are you surprised at some of the hype? Are you seeing the hype they're getting? Is it just me, or are you seeing the hype they're getting?
Okay, so I am, like I said, I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is, I was right here in the middle of everything for Mike Elko at Duke here the last 2 years, and Elko's a legit coach. I mean, I like David Cutcliffe a lot as a person. He and I have a good relationship, and I rooted for him all the time. But things had fallen apart at Duke by the end of his run. Elko had a lot to get right. I think one thing that I kind of raise my eyebrow at when I see the predictions for what A&M could be on the high end is you're just going to have to convince me that the SEC's version of Riley Leonard is in College Station. And I don't just mean the things Riley Leonard can do. I mean, the things he can do at a level above everyone else in the conference. And he's just not. That dude's in Tuscaloosa right now.
Connor Wegman? No Connor Wegman love? Not a Connor Wegman guy?
It's not that I don't have any belief in Connor Wegman. It's that I think, hey, there's been a ton of roster turnover. I couldn't even tell you who from last year's team is back in College Station this year. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, I don't think they have one of the five or six most talented rosters in the league this year. And yeah. I think Elko needs that.
I think too, you know, and I was just, I was, and I know Texas A&M, they've got a manageable schedule. You look at their schedule, very manageable, yeah. Favorable, if you will. When the over-under win total of 8.5 came out, I couldn't believe that. I really, because it's just like, at some point, my question is, are we going to allow Texas A&M to overachieve? Is it possible? Like,
they are a program forever mired in 8-4. Even if they don't play 12 games, they will find a way to somehow be 8-4. Right. I thought about this during the draft. Anais Smith got taken in the sixth round. He was late on the last day, but I remember thinking, man, Devon Achane and Anais Smith were on the same offense and A&M couldn't do shit. Like how much of this is about like, bookmakers not paying attention to every aspect of the SEC thinking Jimbo being gone has to matter X amount, because I think it will. I just don't think it will this year.
Dimitri, who's the fan base outside of Oklahoma, Texas A&M? Those are really obvious. Who is the fan base that Texas fans are going to be the most surprised how many fights they get in with on social media?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question, because here's the thing you said.
This is why you tune in this show. We really cover all the bases here.
So. No, you said a very important word there, and that is surprised. Nobody can be surprised that you're fighting with LSU fans. Like, that is what the entire state of Louisiana's history is built upon. I would say Auburn fans, and granted, I am biased, but, you know, you said earlier that cult is like a term of endearment at Texas A&M. It's not at Auburn, and yet they behave the same way as a cult all the time.
I would say Auburn, too. I think that's a good one. I think Tennessee, they are very, very feisty on social media.
Yeah.
South Carolina, I have firsthand experience. Do not get on the wrong side of South Carolina social media. Boy,
they do not like you, man.
No, they do not.
At some point, you'll have to tell me what you've done, because I once had somebody at a radio station that I don't work at regularly, just, you know, occasionally pop on, asked me if having you on was really the best idea. And I was like, I don't know. I like him just fine.
I'm not surprised, Dimitri, unfortunately, to hear that. But it is what it is. So people don't like when you inject too much truth serum on too regular a basis. We'll just put it that way.
This is the thing about Carolina fans that I have never understood. Like, don't y'all want to be happy? Like, I mean, in your day-to-day life, don't you want to recognize that the circumstances that Clemson used to climb to national prominence do not exist for Carolina? That's okay. I want you guys to win, too. I really do. I think it's better when there are more good teams, but you don't have the benefit of playing Wake Forest every other week.
Yeah, I mean, I said this before, Dimitri, that from the South kind of perspective, it's, you know, what's unfortunate for them is during the greatest run in school history with Steve Spurrier, while they were winning Outback Bowls, Clemson was winning ACC championships. And while some may turn their nose up at that, kids still like to see championship rings over 11-win rings or Outback Bowl rings or Capital One Bowl rings. So
yeah, and the other part of it is if you win the ACC championship, you're going to the Orange Bowl, man. You're playing in prime time on if not New Year's Eve on January 2nd. If you win the Outback Bowl, you've been to the Outback Bowl, right? Like and look, I have no beef with Tampa. It's the only stadium with a pirate ship. How could you hate it? But it's not the Orange Bowl, right? Like you got to admit, Clemson got the better end of that. I want to bring up another, I want to tie this back to your power rankings, because you and I have a big disagreement on your power ratings. Mm-hmm. Who is number four? We agree on the top three. You have the top three is Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss. The only difference I would have is I would go Texas, Georgia, Ole Miss, but we have the same three teams. Who is your number four?
So my number four is the Missouri Tigers. Now, I'm assuming you're going Bama.
I am, but that's because I don't think there's a strong number four. Mm. And I think Alabama just has more talent. Missouri, are you anticipating they're going to score 75 points a game? Because that's the only way they're going to win games.
They lost
their entire defense.
I will say that I believe that most of the folks that see the fall off for Mizzou coming is on the defensive side, which I get.
Yeah.
The good news is, again, they are one of those teams where, and I don't look, Alabama has a more talented roster than Mizzou. And you can shed some light on this in a moment, Dimitri. Like, people are thinking that is Bama about to fall off a cliff? I believe I saw a stat. They still have the third highest blue chip ratio, even after all the departures in college football. Like, it's still arguably the best roster in all of college football. Probably right there with Georgia and Ohio State, I'd imagine, at this point right now. But with Missouri, when you look at the way the schedule sets up, like, they're going to have a month and a half to figure it out. Like, really, truly. So I do love what they had on the offensive side. I like Brady Cook a lot. Of course, the 1-2 punch of Luther Burden, Theo Weiss. I know they lose Cody Schrader, but I think the two guys they picked up in the portal, I think they'll be just fine there. They definitely have some question marks defensively. I'm not saying they don't. And admittedly, part of it is, you know what? I didn't put respect on Mizzou like all year last year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give them an opportunity. All right. I'm going to give them an opportunity, put them up at the top. I know there was a lot of disagreement with the Bama at number, but I had them at five, I believe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I expect that probably to flip flop a little bit, but I do still like Missouri. I do. When you got a guy like Brady Cook, when you have the right trigger man, a guy who's just a winner. I mean, we saw that last year, you know, defensively, again, questions to answer, but I do think they did pretty well in the portal. I thought they added some pieces in the portal defensively. We wouldn't really know, though, how good those pieces are because they didn't hit in the spring game. I should say the spring game, which we could talk more about that in a second. But, no, I like Mizzou, man. I still like Mizzou. They're being looked at. I mean, here's the thing. You look at their schedule, Dimitri, they're probably favored in 11 games.
Yeah,
truly.
Okay,
and I mean that listen. One game in Tuscaloosa, who knows? I mean,
that's fair. That's fair. Here's what I would say. I think that because of how good that passing game was last year, particularly how good, like, Luther Burden is just otherworldly.
He was a freak.
Kind of good, right? Combined with the feel-good story of Cody Schrader, I think the offense got all the headlines, and we kind of overlooked until the end of the season, until going into the Georgia game, we overlooked how much Rakestraw and Abrams Drain were doing to get that offense the ball back over and over again. And Darius Robinson was the defensive player that went first in the draft, was the guy all year long we were talking about with the NFL body. But the depletion of that secondary, I think, is something that can't be overlooked. And I will add to that, and this is personal taste to a certain extent, but I do think it has to be pointed out. I have no faith in Eli Drinkwitz. I don't think he's a good coach. I think even with the run they went on last year, 6-2 in conference, dude, he's 17-17. In conference play through 4 years. Last year, they were 11-2. It is the first time they have been over 500 in his tenure. I think that there is great talent there right now. I think what we saw last year was an aberration, not a sign of things to come.
I will say, Dimitri, all your points are valid. I think this is a huge prove-it year for Mizzou in regards to, like, what are you really? It's like, you know, anybody can pop off and have one special season, but it's like, you know, what are you really? We're going to find out.
And that's the thing, the pop off and have one special season. Scott Satterfield obviously left Louisville in terrible shape, but went to Louisville, leaving App State in great shape. Mm-hmm. And Eli Drinkwitz, and I don't blame him for this, came into a great situation, had a 12-1 season, and immediately moved on. Don't blame him for it. That's what you got to do in this business in order to advance. You got to strike while the iron is hot. We have not seen him build something real. We have not seen him build and sustain something real. We have now seen him twice have nice seasons, but the overall body of work leads me to believe this dude ain't it long term.
So you mentioned Bama in the four spot. It doesn't sound like you put Mizzou at the five either. Would you go Tennessee, LSU? Who would you go behind Bama as the next one up?
I would go Tennessee because I believe the Ia Maialavea hype. I believe that Nico is going to be a real difference maker for the Vols because even if he is not ready to step in and throw darts right away, even if he is as accurate as Joe Milton III was, and Texas fans that may not have paid attention, that is not accurate. he is a combination of not like he's not like Jaden Daniels or Jalen Milroe fast, but he's like Bryce Young fast, right? Mm-hmm. He is fast enough. And the difference between Iaomai Leivea and Young is Iaomai Leivea is a brick shit house, man. Like physically, he just has all the advantages once he gets out in the open field that he's going to be tough to bring down. He's going to make Tennessee a problem for somebody.
Does it surprise, maybe not surprise you, maybe that's not the word. Is it, I think it's interesting how much of the benefit of the doubt Nico's getting. Do you think a lot of that is Josh Heupel's system? Is it just simply how talented he is? I mean, I'm a believer in the hype too. I mean, I think Tennessee is a 9-3, 10-2 kind of fringe playoff team this year. And I think that more so that front seven is disgusting. Like that defense is going to be, like you mentioned, James Pierce, you could argue he's the best defensive player, one of the best defensive players, certainly in college football. They're going to run the football well, which people just, they think about the passing game at Tennessee. I mean, that's the bread and butter. They love to run the football. They're good at wide receiver. Nico's definitely getting the benefit of the doubt, though, which I guess that's not necessarily the case at every single SEC school.
Yeah.
That's got a new quarterback. Hey, there's one down there in Norman, Oklahoma that I don't know. And granted, they got questions on the offensive line.
Sure.
We can talk about them in a second. But there's, I don't know if there's like pressure on, there's high expectations. Though,
sure. There is. And I think you hit like, I don't know what the ratio
you did
is.
You did a segment on this on the College Ball Boba Bath about there's difference in like expectations and like, these expectations.
Absolutely. Like, and I think the two things you hit on, I don't know what the ratio of each one is, but I think it's both. I think it is. He really is that good. And Josh Heupel's offense is basically passing for dummies, right? Like there's a reason Hendon Hooker was never what he was before his year with Josh Heupel. There's a reason that Joe Milton looked at least serviceable enough to be taken in the NFL draft under Josh Heupel. It is hard for a quarterback not to find open receivers in that offense. I do wonder if by year two or three, Nico is held back a little bit by how simple the passing game is. But I'm a believer. I think it's the right kind of system for a guy with those kind of expectations in his first season under center full time.
Demetri, you put it beautifully. I think most Tennessee fans probably think this way, but I think the way you have to think about it is people are going to look at Joe Milton last year, how bad he was. It's like Josh Heupel got him drafted.
Right.
Like he lost two quarterback battles and then ends up getting drafted. Like they squeezed every ounce of good play.
He literally had to play a seventh season of college football just to start.
Like that's, right.
That's
right.
Bananas.
Yeah. So, I think another fringe, we're just going through these, obviously. I'd put LSU right. LSU and Tennessee kind of feel like not maybe mirror images, but they're very, very similar. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. I don't love the quarterback situation there. I know a lot of people are higher on it than I am.
Hey, Nussmeier went 7-for-7 in the spring game.
I mean, listen, Nussmeier also actually played decently against Alabama when he had time to throw. He looked like he can move that ball. Again, that's a roster that's losing so much on both sides of the ball. The key for me with LSU is going to be, do they fix the galaxy brain problems they created for themselves with Harold Perkins last year? Because he is a one-man difference maker on defense.
And I can tell you this, Demetri, they talking to LSU folks, they are really, really worried about the interior of their defensive line. I mean, really concerned, which is weird to think LSU would be that bad at that position because I feel like they've been so good there forever.
Yeah.
And to your point too, Demetri, I mean, I think Garrett Nussmeier will be solid for sure. I mean, I think they've got some dudes at receiver. I think Caleb Jackson's going to be an upgrade at running back. But, like, you don't lose the Heisman Trophy winner and not take a step back. It's impossible.
Exactly. And look at the top three quarterbacks in this draft. They all have something in common in terms of accomplishment. Caleb Williams at USC, Jaden Daniels at LSU, Drake May at UNC. The thing they all have in common is they had no defense to build on their accomplishments, and the most any of them ever accomplished, aside from the individual honors, the most any of them they ever accomplished on a team level is a division championship. LSU fans don't know how to even exist in a world where they have questions about their defense to the point where after 2 years, there are a lot of people that were really shaking the cage of we could only go so far under Ed Orgeron that are already shaking the cage again. Like they can't believe Brian Kelly let that happen. I think they're going to be better. I really do. Like I think that he made the changes that he needs to make, and they are going to be better. I think Saban being gone is a mental bug for Kelly that I don't think he realizes how much that shadow not being over him anymore is going to help. I think he's going to have success there. I just think that, you know, right now that LSU roster is not the Texas roster. It's not the Georgia roster. The one that chews those people up is it's not the Ole Miss roster. That doesn't happen.
Guys, feel free to leave us your questions, your comments, especially as we go into this next one. I can't believe I glossed over this, Dimitri. Again, you were admittedly an Alabama guy. How upset were you that we did not get a Bama-Texas rematch last year in the national title?
Upset, but not.
That was an ass kicking in Tuscaloosa early in the year.
Was.
Now.
It was an ass kicking. Absolutely was. Yeah. I was upset because Alabama was not in it, but not surprised because you'll remember this, Chris, from about October, early October last year, I was saying, man, there's something about this Washington team. This Washington team is really, really good. And Washington was one of those defenses that, like, when they remembered they were supposed to be there, they were awesome. They just gave teams too many chances sometimes. I'd love to see a part three because, remember, Alabama stole one in Austin. The Longhorns came into Tuscaloosa, and you're right. I mean, they dog-walked Alabama in that game. I'd love to get a part three this year because I do want to see, moving forward, what this rivalry is going to be. I don't know if anybody read that Chris Lowe piece about Sark in Texas. This is an educated guess based on talking to Alabama people. That piece paints it as Alabama called Steve Sarkisian. Steve Sarkisian thought, oh, maybe it would be great to go back to Tuscaloosa, and then said no, and Alabama respected his decision. I have reason to believe that Alabama did not so colloquially accept the no as that article paints it out to be. So I do think on both sides, there might be a little bit of extra reason to want a rematch at this point.
You know, Dimitri, it was so fascinating about that Alabama coaching search. It was like, I feel like there were guys leveraging. All you had to do was go out publicly and just say, yeah, I turned down the Alabama coaching job. And it was like the greatest look ever, right? Like you just add that little notch to your belt, even if you didn't get offered the job. Yeah, I didn't want it. I didn't.
Listen, I can tell everybody this for a fact. I saw it with my own two eyes. Like, as much as Alabama wants to paint that DeBoer and maybe Mike Norvell were always the dudes, there was a flight scheduled to leave the Tuscaloosa airport, which is only used for private planes, by the way. There was a flight scheduled to leave the Tuscaloosa airport that was headed to Eugene, Washington. I don't know of any other reason there would be a flight between those two destinations that they thought they would be coming back with Dan Lanning. Hmm.
Give folks perspective, Dimitri, on, I mean, we're obviously entering, you know, this is uncharted territory with Texas and Oklahoma joining the league, but also, I mean, Texas and Oklahoma joined the league. There's no Nick Saban. There's no Nick Saban anymore. Like, what's been the, I mean, of course, you know, we've been covering it, talking about it, but again, you're a Bama guy. What has been, what have the last couple months been like, I guess, adjusting to life? We got music going at practice now, Roll Tide Willie's calling plays. I mean, hell has broken loose in Tuscaloosa at this point.
It's been interesting. So I'll give people a little bit of perspective of why I'm a little bit jaded when it comes to Alabama. That's where I went to school. There's my degree right there from the University of Alabama. Okay. I was at school there from 1999 until 2003. That is 4 years. In that time, we had four different football coaches. Like, I have lived the dregs of Alabama fandom. I used to make the joke that everything Nick Saban was doing was owed to me because of my time in Tuscaloosa. I want everybody to be aware that Nick Saban may have been the thing keeping all that stuff at bay. I don't think it's going to happen right away. I think for 2, 3, 4 years, Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach. There's a lot of talent on this roster. The Alabama reputation, unless they just absolutely bottom out, which I don't expect they will, they're going to be fine. But what Saban did so much better than anybody else was, and Texas fans can appreciate this for sure, was tell the boosters, hey, if you want to win games, I get it. You're going to have to let me do that. Right? Like, there is Alabama had this, Saban had this meeting that is colloquially become called the tip of the spear meeting, where he basically told a faction of boosters, like, if you're going to war, you can't let anything get in front of your weapon or else you are useless. Think I am the tip of the spear with Alabama football. Kalen DeBoer doesn't strike me as the kind of dude that's able to go in there and lead that kind of conversation. I like him. I like music being on at practice. I like doing things that appeal to 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, white, black, Hispanic, whatever. I like doing things that are about the players as opposed to what makes the fan base or the coaches comfortable. It's just a change, and we have to be open to the fact that it could be a change for the worse. I don't think it will be, but it could be.
I think the best thing Kalen DeBoer is doing is being himself, for sure. I think it would have been a mistake to try to copy Nick or be Nick Saban too, because nobody's going to be him. But, you know, to your point, I mean, they didn't win less than double-digit games in a season during Nick. I mean, the worst seasons were, you know, still pretty damn good.
Yeah, so 2010 was the worst season. And what happened literally the season before and after 2010? They won national championships, right? I mean, like, there was a level of comfort we all got to that I promise you was not there when I was at school. I mean, celebrating a last-second field goal against Southern Miss in 01 because, yeah, we're going to the Independence Bowl, baby. Those memories are fresh to me.
I mean, Dimitri, I've said this before, you know, I feel like you know you're old, if you will, if you remember when Alabama football sucked. And yeah. I remember I remember vividly watching in 2004 when South Carolina went to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. I think it was 24-0.
Mm-hmm.
And watching Bama fans leave early. And like,
yeah,
boy, that feels like 100 years ago. Like,
yeah, it's a reality that a lot of kids on that campus, and by the way, like, go to the campus now, it is not at all the school that I went to. It looks completely different. There are kids on that campus that don't know this program is capable of being really bad. And I do think in an era of transition for college football in general, for Bama to be going through their own transition, it's dicey. It's scary for what could be, how quickly the fall could come. I think largely they're going to be okay. I don't think we're going back to the days of, is Alabama going to make a bowl game? But I wouldn't be shocked if they don't make the playoff this year.
Guys, we're going to talk a lot of things. College football, baseball, basketball, you name it. Obviously, we love college football, and it's relevant 24/7, 365. But just want to let you know, on the SEC Unfiltered platform as well, we cover it all. I know that Texas just got a big series win over Oklahoma over the weekend, so y'all stay tuned. Again, we're going to be covering everything as we get in the college baseball postseason. Dimitri, back to the college football side of things. Fill in the blanks for me. If Ole Miss wins less than 10 games, then blank.
That's just, we just have to accept. Sorry, this is a tough thing to put into words. We just have to accept Ole Miss is what they are. We just have to accept Ole Miss is one of those places where you can't improve beyond a certain amount. I think this is true of, like, you know, for Texas fans to put this in perspective of the Big 12, I think this is true of Kansas State. Like, it doesn't matter what the talent is there. It doesn't matter who the coach is there. There's just a level, because of geographically where you are, that you cannot get to. And I think if Lane Kiffin cannot do it this year, it can't be done at Ole Miss.
It would be a nightmare season, I think. Like, to think 9-3 would be a nightmare, but like, with that roster and what they've invested via the portal, like, that's a disaster. If they don't make the playoff, disaster. Disaster has struck at Oxford.
I would tell you that I think they probably had the best chance to go to the SEC championship game that they have had since Eli Manning was in Oxford last year. I think the difference going forward is, and you can see this when you watch the game, Lane Kiffin coached differently against Nick Saban than he coached against anybody else, and Lane beat himself three of those four times that he played Saban in Alabama. Nick is gone now. If Lane Kiffin can just be Lane Kiffin, if he can let his players do what it is they do best for 60 minutes, there is no reason they shouldn't beat Alabama the next time they play. I know they don't play this year, but the next time they play.
And Ole Miss has got one of those schedules too, Dimitri, when you look at it. I mean, it's another one that, I mean, they basically play a preseason in their schedule. I mean, when you look, the first month is like a preseason. They don't start playing teams, all due respect, because they do play Wake Forest, but I mean, they don't start playing teams with a pulse until October. I mean,
no,
really,
listen,
truly.
last year the big non-conference was Tulane, right? Or was there another?
I think it was Tulane. I think that was they were on the road at Tulane.
Right. And look, I thought that was a brilliant move by Lane. I think of all of the SEC programs, the Mississippi school should be giving Tulane home games because it benefits them in recruiting. But it was a tough game. If you watch that game and you saw the final score, Ole Miss never fell behind, but they never looked comfortable in that game. I don't think Wake Forest is any good. Like, I think the days of Wake Forest, you know, being routinely that 7-8-9 win team, I should say, I think they're over. I think Dave Clawson's a miracle worker, but I think he might just be being asked to work with too little at this point.
Dimitri, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm just thinking about Ole Miss, and I mean, I do think – I'm not going to say they're a lock for the playoff because, like you mentioned, with Ole Miss football, you just don't know.
Right.
But with that talent and, again, what they did in the portal, and that leads me to this.
Let me give you the other fill-in-the-blank.
If
they don't win 10 games, Lane Kiffin's out the door. If they win 10 games, I think that the right amount of money could convince Lane he can achieve his ultimate goal at Ole Miss.
I mean, I think that's a very good point. I mean, I think he wants the Bama job, personally.
I think he wanted the Bama job, but I don't think he thought he was going to get the Bama job. I think that he wants to be somewhere. Like, I'll tell you that this has been written about a lot, so I'm not breaking any news here. Remember, Sark was his offensive coordinator at USC. Lane Kiffin thinks he's a better offensive mind than Steve Sarkisian is. He believes he should have a job on the level of Texas right now. And Ole Miss, regardless of the fact that they might, you know, if you line them up, Ole Miss could give Texas a game. You know, that's not the same level of program right now. I think Lane Kiffin has been operating with one foot out the door ever since he got to Oxford.
Is there a scenario, Dimitri, where you think a program like Ole Miss, over time, obviously, can elevate themselves to that level? Like, what does it take for a program, like, let's say Ole Miss, for example, to be looked at like a blue blood? Is it even possible? I mean, is it? Because, like, at one point, Texas or Alabama or some others, like, they weren't blue bloods, although it feels like forever, like, they've been winning.
Exactly.
So, like, does it take 20 years of just winning? Does it take 50 years? Like, is it even possible?
I think that when you look at who you think about the blue bloods of this sport, my son asked me this the other day. He's 12. He said, who would you call a purple blood? He said, somebody that is routinely good, but just can't get it done. And I would say Oregon to that. Oregon has been really, really good for a long time.
And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I think a lot more college football fans need to find joy in going 9-3, 10-2.
I tell people this all the time. Like, you should absolutely pick, if your team is Texas, if your team is Alabama, if your team is whoever, you should absolutely pick a G5 team as well to experience that side of college football. There's my other degree is from Florida International University. So that's one of my two G5 teams, and rooting for FIU is hell. They are god awful. but it does give you exposure to another side of the sport. In answer to your question, Chris, Ole Miss in particular is weird because Mississippi and Alabama culturally, historically, are very similar, and Alabama was willing to be flexible on some of their, let's say, long-held beliefs about human hierarchy in the name of football that Mississippi was not. And I think it put them behind the eight ball for years and years and years, and I just don't know how you erase all that like that. Mm-hmm. Like, at this point, Mississippi public schools are such that they can't produce kids that can qualify for Mississippi State and Ole Miss with regularity. Mm-hmm.
It takes time, for sure. We mentioned the portal, Dimitri, in closing, and we'll wrap this thing up in a couple minutes. But doesn't it feel like we were kind of sold a bag of goods? And I'm not calling anybody out here. Love all the guys in the national media. We've had a lot of them on our show.
Sure.
But it seemed like to me, Dimitri, there were a lot of guys that maybe only talk college football for a living. And again, nothing wrong with those people. We talk college football all the time.
Yeah.
But they rely only on the headlines in college football, that it's like they tried to sell this bag of goods, that this is going to be the craziest portal cycle. And, like, I feel like it's been pretty just meh.
Whatever. Let me say, I'm with you. I don't want to call Josh paid out either, but
thank you.
I do. I'll say this, and Chris knows this about me. You guys, as I'm on this more and more, you will learn. One of my greatest pet peeves in the portal and NIL era are guys that act like the fact that these kids have any agency at all can only mean doom for this sport. I don't think that's true. I do think that it probably took us a few cycles for these kids to realize that there is value in building equity at a place. I can totally understand if one of those cycles is coming. I would love to know what it is, whether it's Josh Pate, Joel Klatt was saying the same thing, Kirk Herbstreit was saying the same thing. I'd like to know, beyond hearing it from a coach, what is it you knew? What is it you heard? Because coaches have an agenda when they tell you this shit. We know it. Quit pretending like you don't.
I would love to know as well. I'll put it that way, Dimitri. I think there was maybe some assumptions going on. I mean, it made me feel like Bama's about to go out here and just pick off everybody's roster.
Right.
And I mean.
Right. I mean, I was watching the spring game and was talking to my roommates from back in school. And they were asking me, you know, what do you see? What do you blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I was operating with the same assumption, Chris. Like, well, clearly they're leaving some reps out there at receiver for, you know, the incoming freshman or whoever they'll pick up in the portal. There's a hole, obviously, on the offensive line. They'll fill it in the portal. What did you know? Like, I just, I hate this desire to carry water for the people in charge. Do your goddamn job. Seriously. And I'm not trying to be funny. Like, it bothers me so much. Do your job. If you call yourself a reporter, report.
There are blurry lines for sure. But good news, I would never call myself a reporter.
I was about to say, that's the thing. I would never call myself a reporter. Chris, we can do this stuff. But if you're holding yourself to a higher standard, meet it.
Indeed. Guys, we appreciate you all tuning in. Again, I'm Chris Phillips. He's Dimitri Ravanas. Dimitri, you'll be back on Friday, right? Is that correct?
On Friday, yes. I guess you will probably diversify the sports offerings in the week in between. I tell people all the time, I went to an SEC school. I gave them my money. I don't owe them attention for sports I'm not interested in.
Very good point. Now, here's what I'll say. On a day in, day out basis, guys, we're going to talk about the top topics people care about, that we care about, that we find interesting. But certainly, I'm a huge baseball guy. I played college baseball myself. We have baseball around the corner. We're going to jump into all that, especially once we get into postseason. Basketball and basketball season. But again, we all love college football, and we could talk about that 24/7, 365. And with the portal, with recruiting, it never stops. I'll be with you guys Monday through Thursday, of course, today through Thursday. Friday, actually, Dimitri, my sister is graduating from the University of South Carolina with her MBA. So we are very happy.
Very good.
Yeah, very good.
Will she be walking through the big chicken gates?
Something like that. Whatever. They might run out in 2001. I have no idea.
Nice. So,
have no clue. But yeah, there will be a wide range of cast of characters of this week. You guys will get to meet all of them. And again, that's how we'll operate sort of on a weekly basis. We'll be switching things up and we'll let you guys know ahead of time what's going on. But again, the beauty's in the banter. We'll continue to bring that every single day. And Dimitri, this was a hell of a first run, my friend. Looking forward to doing more of this with you and I together. And again, man, I appreciate you taking the time and, yeah, looking forward to it, man. It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, me too, man. I appreciate being a part of it, and I appreciate the Texas audience letting us, you know, just introduce ourselves to them in that way. I believe the extent of my knowledge of Texas culture is Pee Wee's Big Adventure. So bear with me, and we will all get through this thing together.
And that's the beauty of it, Dimitri. I wanted to say too is while Texas, Oklahoma, both those fan bases learn about life in the SEC, we're learning about life with Texas and Oklahoma. So indeed, we're all one big, happy, dysfunctional family, indeed. For Dimitri Ravanas, I'm Chris Phillips. Guys, we appreciate you all tuning in. Stay tuned to Texas Sports Unfiltered, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
I'm doing it. I'm not scared of you people.